This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, Justice and Peace. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by Africa News Panorama. We shall close today's program with Sports Roundup. I am Festus Tarawali. The Holy See Press Office, in its Tuesday morning update on the Pope's health condition, said that he slept well throughout the night after suffering two respiratory insufficiencies on Monday. The Pope slept through the night and now continues to rest, read the brief statement. Pope Francis has been receiving treatment for double pneumonia at Rome's Gemelli Hospital since the 14th of February. On Monday evening, the press office said the Pope had suffered two episodes of acute respiratory insufficiencies caused by a mucus buildup. Both times, bronchoscopies were performed to remove the significant accumulation and consequent bronchospasm. The statement noted that on Monday afternoon, non-invasive mechanical ventilation was resumed. The Holy Father remained alert, oriented and cooperative at all times, it said. The Pope's blood test showed he does not have an elevated white blood cell count, suggesting he has no new respiratory infection. His clinical condition remains complex, and further respiratory crises remain possible, said the statement. The Holy Father's prognosis remains guarded, the press statement concluded. The prefect of the Dicastery for Divine Worship and the Discipline of the Sacraments, Cardinal Arthur Roche, will lead the prayer of the Rosary for Pope Francis in St. Peter's Choir on Tuesday night, the ninth consecutive public recitation of the Rosary since the Pope's hospitalization. On Monday night, the prefect of the Dicastery for Bishops, Cardinal Robert Prevost, led the Rosary prayer, urging the faithful to remain in prayer with Mary, Mother of the Church, for the health of the Holy Father. Special prayers have also been offered in Africa and around the world for the health of the Pope. In South Africa, Catholics in Johannesburg Archdiocese gathered at the Cathedral of Christ the King on the 2nd of March to pray for the Pope's recovery. In his homily, the Archbishop of Johannesburg, Cardinal Stephen Bristlin, described the Pope as a shepherd and leader not only of the Church but of the whole world. "We pray that he'll be healed and brought to the fullness of health," said Cardinal Bristlin.
"We come to pray for him because he is our leader, our shepherd. Yet he does not only belong to us. He belongs to the world. For many people of different Christian denominations, people of other faiths, and people of no faith at all, recognize in Pope Francis a most remarkable and strong leader, a leader with vision at a time in the world when there is a vacuum of visionary and inspiring leaders."
Archbishop of Johannesburg, Cardinal Stephen Bristlin. Catholics and people of goodwill in the Archdiocese of Abuja in Nigeria have also been encouraged to pray without ceasing for the speedy recovery of the Pope. This is Archbishop Ignatius Kaigama of Abuja giving the directive during a recent event at the Chancery in Garki in Abuja.
"Yeah, the Pope is a human being. He's 88 years old and he's sick. This is expected of any human being made of flesh and blood. So we only can ask all our Catholics, not only Catholics, but people of goodwill to pray for the Pope. In this hall, we had a meeting, the consultors meeting the other day. We started with prayer for the Pope. And then I instructed that every parish should offer morning masses for the intentions of the Pope specifically."
Archbishop Ignatius Kaigama of Abuja, Nigeria. Pope Francis's prayer intention for March is for broken families that they might discover the cure for their wounds through forgiveness, rediscovering each other's gifts, even in their differences. The Pope's Worldwide Prayer Network has released the Pope video recorded before his hospitalization to accompany the intention. Deborah Castellan-Lubov reports.
Pope Francis's monthly prayer intention this March is for families in crisis. The Pope invited the Church to pray for this intention in this month's The Pope video, which is entrusted to the entire Catholic Church through the Pope's Worldwide Prayer Network. The images in the video were prepared prior to the Holy Father's arrival at Rome's Gemelli Hospital on February 14th, where he continues his therapy for bilateral pneumonia. In the Pope video for March, the Holy Father acknowledged the great difficulties facing families. "We all dream about a beautiful, perfect family, but," Pope Francis recognized, "there's no such thing as a perfect family. For each family," he noted, "has its own problems as well as its tremendous joys. While every member of the family is important because each is unique," the Pope lamented how often their differences cause conflict and painful wounds, as he suggested a solution. "The best medicine to heal the pain of a wounded family," he stressed, "is forgiveness," adding that forgiveness requires giving our family members another chance. God, Pope Francis pointed out, does this with us all the time. Reminding that God's patience is infinite, the Holy Father reminded how he forgives us, lifts us up, and gives us a new start. In the same way, the Pope suggested, pardoning one another always renews the family and makes it look forward with hope. "Even when there's no possibility of the happy ending we'd like," he noted, "God's grace gives us the strength to forgive. Doing so," he explained, "brings peace because it frees us from sadness and, above all, from resentment." Pope Francis concluded by saying, "Let us pray that broken families might discover the cure for their wounds through forgiveness, rediscovering each other's gifts, and even in their differences." I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Reports from Gabon say the leader of the country's military government, General Brice Nguema, announced on Monday that he would stand for the position of head of state in the presidential election scheduled for April 12th. Addressing his supporters in Libreville, General Nguema said his decision to stand was based on the many requests and appeals made to him by the citizens. The military government has fulfilled all the preparations it had promised before the elections could be held, and these include the passing of a new constitution in a referendum held in November last year and a new electoral code. The military in Gabon overthrew the government of President Ali Bongo in 2023, and in the process ending the 55-year rule of the Bongo family, which had been accused of violations of human rights and corruption. Congo, Brazzaville, and Madagascar have launched a joint conservation plan aimed at protecting the primary forests, which support rich ecosystems and rare wildlife, but face increasing threats from deforestation. The launch was made on Monday, March 3rd, Africa Environment Day, with the planting of 3,000 trees in Madagascar. The government of Egypt has expressed concern over the announcement made last week by the rebels of the Rapid Support Forces in Sudan that they would be forming a parallel government in areas they control. Egypt's Ministry of Foreign Affairs has issued a statement in Cairo, rejecting what it calls attempts to threaten the sovereignty and integrity of Sudan, and calling upon all the fighting factions in the country to put national interests above any differences and to positively engage in an inclusive political process without the exclusion of any side. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio. And now, our feature, Justice and Peace. a 2-week training workshop on safeguarding of minors and vulnerable people for missionaries of Africa serving in the Central Africa province ended last Wednesday, February 26th, in the Burundian capital Bujumbura. The province consists of Burundi, Rwanda, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. The participants, 14 in number, came from these three countries. Experts in different fields related to safeguarding were invited to address them. The training was organized by the Department of Integrity in Ministry of the Congregation of the Missionaries of Africa, also known as the White Fathers. The coordinator of that department is Father Laurent Kamwanza. From Bujumbura, he explained to Vatican Radio the objectives of the workshop and more.
To begin with, I must emphasize that our recent safeguarding workshop in the Burundian capital, Bujumbura, is an initiative of the General Council of the Society of the Missionaries of Africa, popularly known as White Fathers. So as a safeguarding coordinator, it is good that I highlight that I operate under their mandate together with my fellow confreres, and it is crucial to highlight this from the beginning. Just to say that the General Council is fully committed to creating safe environments for everyone in the church, particularly for minors and persons in situation of vulnerability. Now, coming back to the objectives of this workshop, we have had three main objectives for this safeguarding workshop. The first one has been to do with reviewing progress and sharing experiences among us missionaries who have been mandated specifically to implement and monitor safeguarding issues. So that was very key to us, that we could share our experiences from different sectors and provinces where we operate. But this one was particularly meant for those safeguarding delegates from the Central African province of the Missionaries of Africa, which include Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Rwanda. And the second objective is being part of an ongoing formation. You know that safeguarding is an evolving field. There are continuous developments in the church in this area. Therefore, an ongoing formation is very essential to our missionaries so that they can acquire new skills and competences in addressing safeguarding issues as they arise in their mission areas. So we wanted to leave out to this. And then the third, which was a key objective, we came here because we wanted to develop a safeguarding policy and update the code of conduct for the Central African province. We, as Missionaries of Africa, we work in 25 African countries, and they are organized into 8 provinces and sections. So each province is required to develop its own safeguarding policy tailored to its specific context. And for the Central African province, this was their crucial moment to fulfill this obligation, and this homework has been successfully done.
Last year, you organized a similar workshop in Rwanda's capital, Kigali. And my question is, how significant are these workshops for your congregation?
We are a missionary congregation, and we work in collaboration with the Universal Church, guided by the synodal spirit that is operating in the church now. So we respond to the call of the Holy Father. Specifically, in 2018, had sent an apostolic letter entitled A Letter to the People of God. It was a letter focusing on safeguarding issues. And the Holy Father urged all the baptized, both ordained and the lay, to commit themselves to create safe environments within the church. This call is a bold response to the various forms of abuse that have been committed against minors and vulnerable persons in the church, but also outside the church, just to say in the society in general. So this mission for us as a congregation, we see it as an opportunity because it aligns well with Jesus Christ's own ministry, in which he prioritized the little ones, the poor, the most vulnerable. And this is very eloquent in the Gospels. So these training sessions are highly significant for us as a congregation because they demonstrate our unwavering commitment to safeguarding. It is also essential for us to educate and equip our members with the necessary knowledge and skills as they are in constant contact with God's people in their mission. They must understand how to responsibly exercise their pastoral authority and powers as they interact with God's people. So, as they say, an informed mind is an unenlightened mind. And as the saying goes, prevention is better than cure. So we are training our confreres, our missionaries, and other pastoral collaborators because we believe that prevention is better than cure.
In the beginning of the interview, you mentioned the objectives. Now, have you met these desired objectives?
The outcome of the session, as we conclude, has exceeded our expectations, actually. We have fully achieved our three objectives. There's been quite a lot of sharing of experiences during the workshop, but also in the corridors among the participants. And that's very, very important and crucial for us because in safeguarding, we believe that best practices have to be shared and to be communicated with others. And then the most important thing is that the final draft of the safeguarding policy for the Central African province has been completed and will soon be presented to Father Arsène Kapia, who is the provincial superior of the Central African province, for his review, amendments and approval when he meets the members of his council. So, absolutely, we have met the objectives of this workshop.
The workshop is over. What is the way forward now in your capacity as a coordinator for integrity in the ministry?
The workshop is over, but the work has just begun. In fact, the main work continues because this is an ongoing formation. So, as a congregation, we remain committed to this mission. And we will continue collaborating with others in response to the call of the Holy Father, but also the new updates from the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors. We are following that. So our next step, specifically after this workshop, and me as a coordinator precisely, is to ensure that this document that will soon be promulgated by the provincial Central African province, my role is to ensure that this document has been communicated well to all the members or the beneficiaries in the Central African province because the policy has been drafted in consultation with them, together with them, and it is meant to address issues arising in their own context of mission. So my role is to ensure that this is well disseminated, it is being implemented, and it is helping us in our mission, helping our missionaries where they are. And concretely, we will carry a similar initiative in Lusaka, Zambia, in 4 months from now. That will be in June 2025 for the missionaries and pastoral collaborators for the Southern African province, which includes Zambia, Malawi, Mozambique, and South Africa. So I take this opportunity to encourage our missionaries there to begin their preparations for this intensive training workshop, and already grateful for their reception to this, but also thanking our partners for their support and prayers.
Okay, Father Rolenti, that is all that I had, but if you have anything to add on what you have said, please, you can do so.
I have said it before, and I take this opportunity to repeat this because I believe this is very important. Safeguarding is the mission of the entire church. Taking well care of the little ones, the most vulnerable, is a mission of Jesus Christ. It is a mission entrusted to his church. It is a responsibility entrusted to every baptized person by Jesus Christ to protect the little ones and the most vulnerable in our society. This is where the church's social doctrine of the preferential option for the poor and vulnerable finds its most profound expression, I believe. And as a congregation, we are celebrating this year a bicentenary, 200 years of the birth of our founder, Cardinal Charles Lavigeri. He was a pioneer in this mission, a true champion of safeguarding. his legacy continues to inspire us to carry on this vital work in the church today. So I call upon my fellow missionaries of Africa, everyone, all our collaborators, put our efforts together in living out this mission, ensuring that we create safe environments for the little ones, for the most vulnerable, and of course, for every person with whom we are in contact with, because that's the mission that Jesus Christ has entrusted to us.
Father Laurent Kamwanza, the coordinator of the Department of Integrity in Ministry of the Congregation of the Missionaries of Africa. He was speaking there from Burundi's capital, Bujumbura. And that was Justice and Peace for this week. This has been Johnny Baptist Tumusime.
This is a sports roundup and welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. African football legends are up in arms about the belittling of the Africa Cup of Nations as a major tournament on the world stage. The anger follows remarks during the week when former Liverpool defender turned television commentator Jamie Carragher slandered the AFCON, describing it as not a major tournament, and no one knows what prompted such an ugly thought. While reacting to Mohamed Salah's terrific form, helping Liverpool to beat Manchester City 2-0 last Sunday, Carragher suggested the Egyptian would have to win the Champions League in order to win the Ballon d'Or because AFCON was not recognized by voters as a major tournament. Salah, whose form this season sparked social media discourse on the possibilities of his emerging the Ballon d'Or winner, has scored 25 goals and 16 assists in the Premier League and 3 in the UEFA Champions League. This African is the topmost player in the running for the prized football honour. Well, Carragher has received serious backlash on social media, with past and present top African players all venting their anger on him. One of these African football legends is stand-in captain of the Super Eagles, William Troost Ekong, who has added his voice to African players defending the glory of the African Cup of Nations, the AFCON. Ekong, who trades his skill with Saudi Arabia's Al Khulod, said in a lengthy post on his ex, former Twitter, that the African continent has contributed as much as the others towards the development of football, adding that let's not waste time comparing but celebrating one of the crown jewels of the game, the AFCON, that brings us all together. The former Watford player insisted that he was proud to have played football in 7 countries and treasures his participation in the AFCON. He singled out the performance of Ademola Lookman, who single-handedly won the UEFA Europa League for Atalanta last season, scoring all 3 goals in the final and being voted the African Player of the Year. He went on to say that he must also speak for all the boys and girls without a voice on our continent, for whom, too, this tournament is their ultimate dream. Ekong, who was voted the most valuable player of the 2023 AFCON in Cote d'Ivoire, is already looking forward to representing Nigeria at the 2025 edition in Morocco. Former Manchester United attack coach Ben McCarthy has been named the new head coach of Kenya's national men's football team, the Harambee Stars. The 47-year-old has signed a contract until 2027, with his role commencing immediately. He will be supported by a seasoned technical team, including Vasili Manousakis as assistant coach, Moenebi Josephs as goalkeeper's coach, and Pileda Mopasa as performance analyst. His first challenge with Kenya will be to face Gambia and then host Gabon this month in the next round of qualifiers for the 2026 World Cup. McCarthy enjoyed a stellar career with top clubs such as Porto, where he won the UEFA Champions League in 2003, as well as Ajax Amsterdam, Celta Vigo, Blackburn Rovers and West Ham United. This appointment marks his debut as a national team manager. The government of Malawi has held the country's Council of Sports for its prestigious National Annual Sports Award initiative. It described the move as a vital platform for promoting excellence in sports and installing a hard-working spirit among athletes, coaches, administrators and associations. The Minister of Youth and Sports, Uchizu Mkandawire, made the remarks during the 60th edition of the Malawi Sports Award ceremony held at Sunbed Nkopola in Manguchi, where 14 categories were recognized for their outstanding performances in the 2024 season. Held under the theme Celebrating Sporting Excellency, some of the notable winners at the 2024 Malawi Sports Award include the Netball Association of Malawi President Vitumbiko Gubuduza, who was named Sports Administrator of the Year, while Chess in Schools program took the Best Executed Sports Development Program Award. Sports Minister Mkandawire praised the Malawi National Council for Sports for the consistency and professionalism displayed since the inception of the awards. He said further that the initiative is significantly contributing to the growth of sports in Malawi. We now join the Namibia Football Association in mourning the death of one of its sports administrators. 47-year-old Charles Siawia was the Secretary General of the Namibia Football Association. He died in hospital on Sunday following a short illness. He met his death shortly after having a meeting with officials from the Council of Southern African Football Associations, COSAFA. As we express our solidarity with the Namibia Football Federation, we also wish the soul of the Secretary General Siawia to rest in eternal peace. And on that note, we come to the end of today's edition of our Sports Roundup. Until next week, at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praise be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.